Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis, and we have the fabulous producer, Jay, on the line with us. Always so happy to have Jay. I hope that you all are finally getting into the swing of the new year. And again, as I said last week, don't let the new year be the only time you revamp what you're doing. I use my birthday for that and much more than the new year, but you can make a change in your life any day of the week. It doesn't have to be something special or monumental. But I hope that as this new year is kicking off, everybody's feeling healthy and kind of getting into their groove. Today's guest, I'm so excited to share with you. I've had him on before. It's Dr. Steve Bierman. And he wrote the book Healing Beyond Pills and Potions, Core Principles for Helpers and Healers. And I tracked him down because I saw his book and then I called him at his clinic. I wanted him on the show. And this one, he has a new book. And Dr. Steve, I love that he sent it to me in Malta so that I could read it before the show. And it is phenomenal. So we're going to talk today about the book, The End of Worry, a clinically proven four-step protocol for ending the worry habit forever. Dr. Steve Bierman, welcome to All About Healing.
Hi, Emily. It's nice to be back. Great to hear your voice.
It's great to hear your voice. You're so calm, and your voice is so rich and thick and beautiful, and I'm grateful to have been connected with you. And I have to tell you, when this book showed up, it's large print, and it's not very thick, and it is packed full of wisdom and information. It would honestly be overwhelming if it were any bigger. So, like, when I first saw it, it was like, oh, that's large and it's also thin. It's, okay, this will be easy to get through. And that was just really not quite the deal because it's every single page has so much valuable information that I have found myself really reading it in small increments to sit with the information that's there. And so I kept it in my car. Every time I was parked, I would just pull it out and read a couple of pages and then try to follow it. Now, I couldn't change seats when I was reading that part in the car, but I have to tell you, this book, it is so user-friendly. It is so well-written, so packed full of information. Anybody who's listening to this right now, The End of Worry, a clinically proven four-step protocol for ending the worry habit forever, I'm not even making this up. There's a reason you sent this to me in Malta, because it is that good. It's a fabulous book. So before we jump into it, let's give everybody more of your background so they understand who you are and why you can write a book like this.
Well, first, thanks for those kind words. It's very gratifying. You know, you write a book in isolation, and to get feedback of that sort, as well as the feedback I'm now getting from around the world, it's profoundly gratifying. I'm grateful to you. My background began as a typical allopathic physician. I was trained at Northwestern University School of Medicine, did a residency at UCSD in San Diego in family practice, and then was board certified and practiced emergency medicine for 20 years at Scripps Hospital in Encinitas, California. During that time, as you know, Emily, I learned many other treatment of both what was present and wonderful in traditional Western medicine, but also what was lacking. And so I learned neurolinguistic programming. I studied with a Taoist priest for fears. I practiced style hypnosis both in the emergency room and in my private practice, which I've continued now for four decades. And it's primarily in the private practice where I began to realize that worry is ruining a lot of people's lives. And I came across a book called The Art of Peace. If you haven't read it, I think you'd thrill at reading it. It's really quite beautiful. And in the book, he quotes an ancient Chinese adage, worry is a misuse of the imagination. And it's really my favorite old saw, because implicit in that worry is a misuse of the imagination is the implication that there's a proper use of the imagination, but you're just not doing it. And that, coupled with the constant flow of patients that I have who, in addition, say, to other problems, often very complex, are beset with worry and the consequences of worry. And so it was over a 4 or 5 year period, piecing together this protocol, which, you know, incorporates principles of neuroplasticity, neurolinguistic programming, Pavlovian conditioning, and Ericksonian hypnosis. It's all sort of compressed together into these four simple steps, and it really works.
Yesterday, it wasn't yesterday, but anyway, it might have been one of these recent days, I practiced the part that you had in the book where you do the affirmations, but you shake your head yes if it's a no, and you shake your head no when you're doing a yes affirmation. And it felt really familiar to me in some sort of teaching. My naturopath used to do certain things like that when we would do NAET, and I would hold my hands in my head, and he would treat me while I would say statements similar to that, but I wouldn't move my head. I know that that's sort of getting into the middle of the book, and I definitely want to start from the beginning, but I'm so curious, the background, is that neurolinguistic programming, or where does that part come from where you do it in an opposition?
It's not neurolinguistic programming per se. I learned that, although I'm applying it differently and for slightly different purposes. I learned that straight off a videotape of Milton Erickson in a session with a patient. And he did something very similar, having them answer yes, shake their head no, and vice versa. And it took me a while, years actually, to figure out what he was doing, what the effect was, and why, and when you would use that. And then as I was piecing together the worry protocol, I realized that in the intermission, which we'll get to, that in the intermission, it was actually the perfect format. And I'll explain in more detail what that does, but basically, it wipes your mental slate clean and makes room for creative change.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so here's what I want to do, and I want to take it well beyond this segment and through the whole show. What I was thinking, if you're open to this, is I want to discuss each part of the layout so that anybody who's listening can pick up some of what you're teaching in this book. And then I hope that they buy the book to be reminded of what they learned today. How does that work? How does that sound to you?
Sounds perfect. Let's do it.
Okay. Great. Okay. So I want to start with the very beginning, and I want to talk about, you already did the misuse of imagination, which I think is so important because me as a person who's dealt with really severe anxiety in my life for years, my imagination is so wild. And then when I want to use it for the greater good, it's taken a lot of work to try to harness it. Because I've always said anxiety is creativity with no place to go. That's how I've always described it. Nobody ever said that. That's what I believe. I believe that anxiety is creativity with no place to go. I never knew how to channel it into a different tuner to get to where I needed to be for many years. And now that I have, like, acceptable outlets in my body to release the creativity, I write books for that reason.
Right.
To harness it. So we did that. So let's start with step one. Or do you want to do a time and a place before we get into step one?
And the competency challenge. Let me put forth this competency challenge so your listeners have an idea of the importance of diligently applying the worry protocol. I found over the years that if I just teach this and without any kind of challenge to my patients, it just sounds too easy. It's almost incredible. You mean if I apply this four-step protocol every time I worry for the next 3 or 4 weeks, my worry will stop forever and I'll have this gushing release of creative energy? Nah, I don't think so. Very hard for people to just accept that it can be that easy. And so I spend time with people before I give it to them. And it's usually something like this. This is called building response potential. It's an Ericksonian technique. I'll usually say to someone, after a worry is identified, and often its sequelae, the consequences, are demonstrated, I'll often say, you know, you could get rid of that. It's just a habit. You've gotten rid of habits all your life. You had the habit of crawling, the habit of babbling. Sometimes you had a smoking habit or some other habit. We're all good at eventually getting rid of habits, and worry is a habit. It's just a misuse of your imagination. Problem is, if I give you these four steps, I am concerned that you just won't do them. You might do them once or twice and feel kind of okay about it, or you might expect it to be a magic bullet and there's no work that you have to invest. And that's just frustrating for me, and it'll be a waste of time for you. So I don't know, should we do this or should we just move on? That's the kind of tease, and I'll drag it out painfully, Emily, in the office, until at some point they're saying, Doc, for heaven's sakes, I promise you I will do this every time I worry, at which point I say, okay, let's go.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, because I have to say, this is quite a commitment. So for everybody who's listening, this is not just you read the book once and okay, you've read the book. This is you apply this every time you start to feel that thing come up.
Right. I tell people it's not the reading, it's the doing that gets you to your goal. You have to do it. But here's the other side of that. Once you've obliterated a habit, you think of your old habits. You know, crawling was one of your first really heavily reinforced habits. But when you give it up, especially when it's displaced by something so much better, walking, skipping, jumping, it's pretty easy to not go back. And that's what happens here. You just have to make the initial investment. And instead of, say, learning to walk, you're learning to use your imagination correctly.
Okay, so let's, a time and a place, a time and place. Let's go right into that spot.
Okay, the eventually, as you've memorized the worry protocol, run it a few times, you know how to do it. You can do it anytime in any place, wherever you are. And if, for example, you're driving and you'd rather not distract yourself, you can just remember what the worry is and commit to run the protocol on it at some time in the very near future. However, the first time or two that you do the worry protocol, and I'll often sit with people and guide them through the first time, but the book I think it's great at doing that. It'll take you through exactly what you need to know. But what you'd like to do is set yourself up to succeed. And so pick a quiet place. It doesn't matter if it's your kitchen table or an office or a living room. And have the chair you're going to work in initially, but also have another chair nearby that you can move to. And when you sit in that second chair, look back at where you were sitting. And there will be an important exercise, an intermission, where you imagine yourself sitting in that first chair and you feel for that person. You understand them. You have this, it's called third position, this outside perspective on yourself. So a time and a place, pick a time initially where things are relatively peaceful around you and you have two chairs and you can move from one to the other and back.
You know, I did that part where I thought of myself, and it is, I'm assuming that most people have this. There's parts of it that are really sad when you look at sort of the things that I've been through because of my anxiety, the things that I stopped myself, the massive amounts of life that I missed because of my, it was so much bigger. I mean, it was just constant fear all the time that it took me out of my life. And I sat in the chair and I thought of myself and what I was in before, and it made me very sad. I mean, I also made sure that I saw myself who I am now. But there is something about being in those different chairs and looking at yourself and giving yourself some grace, I think, is really important when you're trying to overcome this. Do you find that a lot of people tend to beat themselves up?
It's not so much a punishing sensation as it is what you described. And I have to say, Emily, that's why I love speaking with you. You're so honest. And I hope your listeners appreciate what you share with them, because you come from a deep place. What most people experience, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. This is after part three of the protocol. But when they shift positions and look back upon themselves, if you look at yourself honestly and compassionately, the feeling is just what you described. It's sadness. It's this sorrow. It's also, you get a sense of, wow, do I really want to be that person, wasting this precious gift of life on these negative imaginings? And it is a profoundly sorrowful experience for many people. But it's also motivating, and that's why it's the first part of the intermission.
Okay, so I sped it up, but I have to say, it is motivating. And thank you for what you said, because I do, sometimes because I've come so far, I tend not to relive what it was, but I spent 7 years of my life, from 25 to almost 32, in complete panic. It was like everything that I built in my life just stopped. And it was like I sat down on the curb and just watched my life go by. And it was a year of sobriety. I wasn't quite an alcoholic, but I was so damn near close that I decided to take a year of no drinking. And it made me realize how long I had been self-medicating. And so not only was I sober, but I was going through a horrible heartbreak, and then finally facing the death of my father that happened when I was 13. But when I was 25, it all came to a head, and there was just no more running. I couldn't. And so it was like I just sat down. And the anxiety and the panic really took me down under the water. It was a horrible. I did so much therapy. Every kind of therapy that came near me, I did it. I walked on fire. I did all kinds of stuff. I really walked on fire. That was not a metaphor. I really did do fire walks and sweat lodges and psychiatrists and psychologists and EMDR therapy and hypnotherapy and psychics and mediums and Native American soul recovery and extraction. I tried medication. I tried herbs. I did put in Chinese medicine. I did everything humanly possible to try to recover. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, was to reclaim my life and come back to life, and I created something totally different than who I was before that time. I feel like a very different person, and it's taken a lot of years to go forward. And even the other day when I was reading your book, and I got this really great opportunity coming my way, and I got so excited, and then that one side of me went, well, don't get too excited, because you know what happens when you're that happy. And then I had to stop myself and go, this is your precious, beautiful, delicious life. Be that happy. Be happy. Allow that in, because what is the punishment for actually enjoying this moment? Give it permission. And I had to stop. I was walking around outside looking at the sea, and I was like, you stop right there. And it was my own internal dialogue that was, you know, the motivator. You have every reason to feel this way, happy and excited. Don't block that. But it took how many years of therapy and work to become the better voice in my head instead of the voice that was wreaking havoc, you know, the monkey mind, as the Buddhists call it, and the coyote medicine, as the natives call it. You know, there's always some way. That misused imagination, when you wrote that in the book, it just made me stop in my tracks. Now, I know that a commercial break is coming up. I don't want to jump into step one just yet, but as soon as we get back from the break, let's identify the worry and start from there. Don't go away, everybody. We have Dr. Steve Bierman on the line, and that's B-I-E-R-M-A-N, Steve Bierman, and this book is called The End of Worry. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscle's emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscle's emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. If you're just tuning in, or if you're just listening for the first time because you love the guest, Dr. Steve Bierman, my name is Emily Francis, and we record every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central European Standard Time, where I am on the island of Malta. So you guys are at breakfast, I'm at dinner. Okay, Dr. Steve, let's jump right in. Identify the worry.
Very good. Well, so let's define what we mean by worry. I think that's the most important thing. This is the most important step. There's a big difference between prudent downside planning, where you imagine something perhaps negative could happen and you make allowances and preparations for that. That's just a normal, healthy way of proceeding through life. That's not what worry is. Worry is a recurrent downside, meaning negative imagining, over which you have no control, that often wells up from deep in the unconscious. Sometimes you feel it as anxiety or fear. I often have patients coming to the office saying, "Oh, I'm stricken with anxiety," or "I just live in this dread fear." But if you plumb beneath that symptom, you'll often find they're imagining some negative outcome, something horrible will happen. And so it's important to understand that what we're going for when we identify the worry is, what is it are we imagining? What downside scenario has come to mind that we're thinking of perhaps again and again without taking any action beyond that? We're just, in a sense, being victimized of it. Now, this is a very important step because you have to identify the worry, and in doing so, realize that you're wresting it from the darkness of unconsciousness and bringing it into the light and making it subject to the edifying effects of the next step two, step three, step four. So identify the worry. What specifically are you imagining? And these are usually imaginings that occur in the future. You're imagining some future outcome. And let me just give some warnings here, okay? You want to specifically go to what's in your imagination. You don't want a topic. You know, I had a guy say, "Oh, I'm worried about my teeth," for example. That's in the book. Well, your teeth, that's a topic. What are you imagining will happen to your teeth? That gets us to the worry. Another person, this commonly happens in the very beginning, said, "Well, I'm afraid I'll get sick on my vacation. I'll have to come home and I'll ruin it for everyone, and I'll suffer and they'll suffer before, during, and after, and I just don't want to have to go through it," something like that. That's not a worry. Step one, identify the worry. It's singular. So tease those multiple worries apart and pick one at a time, and then run the protocol, step two, three, four. Run the protocol on each worry individually. This only happens in the very beginning when you first start out. Eventually, it's like swells in the ocean. They tend to spread out and individuate. But step one, identify the worry. That's the key to this whole thing. And you have to be honest with yourself and go beneath the fear and anxiety. Fear and anxiety, I want to say this again because it's so important. Fear and anxiety are often derivative. They're in consequence of your negative imaginings.
It's so true. You know, when you're telling me this, and when I was reading this in your book, I wanted to ask you this question because I wanted to see how far apart this idea is. The first therapist that I saw when I realized I needed serious help, she really started me in a habit, and I can't decide if it's actually a really good thing or not, but she would say, imagine the worst thing that could happen. And then she'd say, okay, so ask yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen with this situation? So, like, my example is, I was in my best friend's wedding during a time that anxiety was plaguing me, and I was the maid of honor, and I was petrified to be up at the front because she was going to have like 300 people at this wedding, and I've got to stand at the front. And she said, okay, what's the worst that happens? And I said that I would run out, that I would have a panic attack, and I'll leave the wedding. And she said, okay, let's start from there. Can you sit down? Can you sit on the bench instead of leaving the whole place until you're ready to get back up? So I said, okay, maybe. So I go to my friend, and I'm like, okay, listen, at your wedding, if I really, really freak out, is it okay with you if I sit down? She goes, what? No, I will kill you. Okay, that plan didn't work. You know, it was the hardest thing I've ever done was to stay standing. But I found that that little habit pattern has stuck with me forever. So everything I look at, I think, okay, what's the worst that can happen? And then I take my step back. What's the next worst thing? And then what's the next and the next until I'm standing where I'm standing. Is that a positive way to approach it, or is it actually entertaining the worry thoughts too much?
Well, my first take on that, and I'll give that to you with, you know, provisos, I rethink later in case there's something else. It strikes me as, on the one hand, partial, and on the other, not maximally efficient. You're imagining yourself. This. Let's do our step one. What are you imagining? You're imagining that you're going to have a panic attack while standing during the wedding ceremony, mm-hmm. right? That's a negative use of your imagination, okay? And if you don't mind, Emily, that's clear. It's obvious that that's what's going on in your imagination. So let's go to step two. In that book I referenced, The Art of Peace, the quote of the Chinese proverb goes on to say, behind every worry is a fear. And it is. So you're not having that worry now, but let's pretend you are.
I still get those worries. I still get that. What if I freak out and run away? I still have that in certain situations.
So then pick a scenario that you still have it in, so because this will be useful to you.
Well, I can tell you I audited a class in this master's program at the university here in Malta. And I thought, you know, it's been so long since I've dealt with anxiety that never entered my mind. And then all of a sudden I'm in this classroom and I freaked out. And it was this thing of, you have 4 hours and you can't leave. Like, I fully went back 10 years. Like, I texted my husband and I said, oh my God, I'm a student again. I'm completely flipped out. And he was like, so kind, sending me texts. It's okay, just breathe. You're going to be fine. You know that nothing's actually wrong right now. But it is that thing of, what if people know that I'm not as strong or confident or comfortable and I freak out and let everybody see that I might still be broken? And before you answer, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back and pick up exactly where I just said something like that. All right? So we'll be right back, everybody.
Trauma or joy, shame or happiness, guilt or empowerment. Let Emily's new book, Healing Ourselves Whole, be the bridge to help you release negative emotions to help you heal on every level to create more joy, more health, and more vitality. Our body knows what we might forget. It's time to rearrange your inner conversation into spectacular health and happiness, and Healing Ourselves Whole is your step-by-step guide. Find out more at emilyafrancisbooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing. Create your own path to physical, emotional, energetic, and spiritual wellness can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself Now.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. We're knee-deep already into the end of worry, and I just threw down a bombshell, at least for myself, that I still have fears when I'm put in places that I can't leave the situation, that I was in a classroom and I really freaked out. So all these years later, I mean, I stayed, but I had numbing of the face. I had all kinds of body symptoms again, and I thought those things were so far in the past. So the fear. So let's pick up. Identify the fear.
Well, let's go back for one sec. So when you were in that class, what was your primary worry? What were you actually imagining was going to happen? Let's get that concrete.
Okay. So I started dealing with my father's passing. My dad died of a massive heart attack. He went out to play tennis when I was 13, and he never came home. So he was my favorite person in the world. He lived by Earl Mundell's vitamin Bible. He was playing tennis. I spent the night at a friend's house. He gave me a kiss and said, I'll see you tomorrow. Sorry I can't come to the gym with you, because he always went to my Saturday gymnastics, but I have a match and I'll see you after. And that was it. And it wasn't until I was 25 that I started fearing dropping dead of a heart attack. Actually, no, that's not true. I thought I was going to have a heart attack from that day. So I would like to wake up as a child.
Wait a minute. Let me interrupt, Emily. Yeah. You're going off, I want to isolate it so people can hear how we do this.
Okay.
In that classroom, at that time, what were you imagining? I'm not asking for your fears yet. What were you imagining? What were you picturing was going to happen, could happen?
Having a heart attack.
So you mean you're in the class and you were actually thinking you could have a heart attack in the class?
Yes.
Okay, so that's your worry. Now,
Yes. Let's
run this protocol. And I'll explain afterwards. I'm going to ask you a question. I may interrupt a time or two to get clarity, and I'll explain why and what I was doing after. So you're imagining that you're in the class and you're going to have a heart attack. What's the fear? That behind every worry is a fear. What's the fear?
That it will just be a panic attack and I made a fool out of myself.
And, okay, that is somewhat fearful. What's the real fear?
That it wouldn't be a panic attack and would actually be a heart attack. You know that mix where you're like, no, I'm not really having a heart attack, it's anxiety. It's anxiety. But then you have that second fear that goes, but what if this time it's not?
And if you had the heart attack, then what? What's the real fear? What's at the bottom?
That nobody would be there to save me.
And?
That I would die.
Yeah.
And that I would leave my children.
You would
that I would do exactly
how?
What happened.
Say again?
The fear is that I would die and leave my children exactly the way me as a child was left.
Right. So let's pause now. What happened when I asked you was the first fear that you identified, you know, that I'd have, it wouldn't be a heart attack, it would be a panic attack. That's a screen. And we all should understand that when we're looking for fears within ourselves, I mean big fears like the one we finally identified, When we're looking for those, our unconscious will instinctively protect us. And so whatever you come up with first is a screen. It's a real fear, but it's a screen. And behind that screen, look what was hiding. What was hiding is this fear that you'll leave your children the same way you were left. That's a profound fear, right?
Right.
You have to stay. I'm with you on this, Emily. We're doing this together, even though we're miles and miles apart. I promise you I'm with you, okay?
Okay.
Now, that's something hard to look at, but I'm going to ask you to realize this, okay? It's natural that someone, a loving mother with children, would deeply, deeply wish to spare them what it was she had to go through at the toughest, most unfortunate moment of her childhood. It's natural. But realize times are different. You're taking all the measures you can to protect your heart and stay well, and to protect your mind and stay well, and that these are different times. And so you have that fear. Face it. Look right at it. That's the fear of exiting the way your father did, leaving your children the way he did. That's the fear. And then I'm going to ask you to put that up there. I usually see it in the upper right-hand corner, but you pick where you want it. And hang it up in the fear in your fear closet. There'll be more fears you identify as you run the worry protocol. But you can pack them all in that closet. And for now, just close the door. If you want to look at your wardrobe of fears later, you certainly can. They're going to be there. You can look at them. And let's move from there on to the next step.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, so what we've done is step one, identify the worry. Step two is we've identified the fear. Step three is plan, underscore the word plan. Plan the downside. What is that? So the downside is the worry comes true. That's why it's essential that you identify the worry properly. Remember, in this case, the worry, as you stated it, was you're worried you have a heart attack in there. You'll be in the classroom and you'll have a heart attack, correct?
Yep.
Okay, let's do that. I'm with you. Let's do this together. The step three is plan the downside. You're in the classroom, you have a heart attack. What's the plan? And the plan is a detailed, actionable, sequenced series of steps that you and others can take. So we have to be very detailed. What we see, hear, smell, feel, we've got to be detailed. So let's say you're in the classroom, you have a heart attack. What's the first thing you do?
Well, I've already identified the defibrillator before I got to the classroom because I do that in every building there is. So I know there's one there. So I would probably tell someone to go get it and call 112. In America, would be 911.
Okay. And so the defibrillator is brought to your side. You don't need it because you're not in fibrillation. But let's say you're having some degree of distress and the paramedics are called. Certainly there'll be people around you. What do you hear? What do you say? What do you feel?
To be really honest, I think I would feel mortified.
Right.
It's as scary of a thought to be in public and have people see this as
That's
it is
right.
for it to actually happen.
That's right. And feeling mortified, what might you hear them say to you?
I don't know. People are probably really nice. Lay down. Are you okay? I mean, can I get you something?
Uh-huh.
People are really nice, especially here in Malta.
You'll hear reassurance. And for the sake of time, what I would do in this is I would sequence this out, and this is the downside. So remember, you had the heart attack, maybe you went to the hospital, eventually you recovered. That is the end of our downside plan. Now you know that were that fear, were that worry rather, were the worry to eventuate, you have a plan. It's not desirable, but you can handle it, and you will be discharged from the hospital. That's the plan.
That's more fun speaking to a doctor. All right, we've got to take a quick commercial break, but we have one more segment left, so don't worry. We're going to get through to the next step. We'll be right back.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
If you have low vision or are blind, then listen up. There's now high visibility trendy sports clothing available just for you. At AwareWolfGear.com, you'll find attractive, stretchy, warm hoodies, headgear, leggings, even kids' wear to fit the duality of blindness, the need to be seen without drawing needless attention. Check out these trendy clothes for yourself or for someone you know at AwareWolfGear.com. That's AwareWolfGear.com. AwareWolfGear.com.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm going to jump right in because we only have one more segment. So, Dr. Steve Bierman, where can people buy the book, The End of Worry?
Well, you can buy the book on Amazon. It's an e-book, and as you said, Emily, it's a small, relatively inexpensive paperback. And I hope people who relate to this and know that they are worrying use this book, because they don't need to worry any longer if they adhere to the protocol. Let's pick up where we were.
Yes, let's do.
Okay, so we've identified the worry, we've identified the fear, and we've planned the downside. None of that was pleasant, okay, nor is it intended to be. Now we take an intermission, and I'm going to fly through this because I want to get to step four, but in the intermission, you move to the other chair and look back at yourself. We've discussed that. You'll feel, if you're like others, a sense of pity for that person who just got done planning the downside. That's very painful in many cases. I'm sure it was not pleasant for you, Emily. After that, we do the yes, no, no, yes step, which I call through the looking glass. And if you need help with that, I have on YouTube, I'm right there with you, and I'll walk you through it as you read it. That wipes the mind blank, and it makes it, if you will, sort of a fertile void for something new. It, as Erickson said, it depotentiates, weakens all that went before, and allows for a new space. And then in that new space, well, we're going to anchor that fertile void with what's called drop tongue, where you take two breaths and you drop your tongue, this comes immediately after the yes, no, no, yes. You freeze your tongue in its place so there's not a flicker, not a twitch, and you have to be perfect at this. When you do that, and you've achieved it, take two deep breaths again. Now you've anchored everything to that dropped tongue, and from now on, all you ever need to do is, after your downside planning, just freeze your tongue still as stone, and when you've gotten it, take two deep breaths, and now we move to the proper use of the imagination, step four. Plan the upside. What's the upside? Well, Emily, the upside is the worry doesn't happen. So you're in the classroom. You get through the entire lecture. All 4 hours are done. And you feel good about that, I assume. At least you feel relieved. This is the upside. Now, what do you do? Let's start with, okay, you texted your husband. Now the upside is happening, right? The worry did not occur. What do you text him back? Who do you communicate with? What do you feel? Give me a plan, a sequenced series of events that you can and will actually do. We're going to plan it and then intend it.
So, for me, the first thing I did was congratulate myself, because
yeah.
I am my best cheerleader. So I gave myself
yep.
the pep talk and then texted my husband that I made it through and that I would be heading home. And then I went back the next day for the next class, because I had to take every day for 6 days.
And
every day got
a
little better,
plan.
A little better.
Right. This is an upside plan. Remember, I'm not asking you to tell me historically what occurred.
Oh, okay.
So I want
the
you to go
plan.
Beyond that. So in your upside
okay.
plan, let's say you did that, and then your husband and you, what did you do that night? What would you do in the upside plan that night?
I mean, I would go home and just sit with it for a minute.
Okay. How do you feel? What do you hear? What do you smell, see, taste? Are you eating dinner together? What are you doing? It's a plan.
I'm probably going to go sit outside and give thanks.
Okay.
So I do a lot of everybody knows when I go outside, I'm on my own. I'm not there to give thanks, talk to the moon, see the sky, feel myself, just really sit inside my body so that I can get
Beautiful.
Balanced with my thoughts
Beautiful.
And my,
then,
and my whole thing.
And how do you sleep in this upside plan that night?
Like a baby.
You sleep like a baby. I hope that doesn't mean you sleep for an hour and cry for an hour.
No.
That was my baby.
I think
baby.
I sleep deep. Yeah.
You sleep deep. And the next day when you go to class, knowing, remember, it's an upside plan, knowing that things worked out and that your fear is in the fear closet, how is that next day class? It's a plan, not the history. It's your upside plan. What will you do?
I will actually enjoy the whole reason I went to class. Like,
right.
I will actually be present to the people that came in town to teach such a class.
And what will you
did.
Hear? Will you hear your thoughts or the lecture or what else?
I hope I don't hear my thoughts. I hope I just hear the lecture.
Perfect.
I hope that I can sit and enjoy and actually make friends and look around instead of looking inside.
Yes, and as you make friends, whenever that is, during a break or after the lecture, what types of things might you hear? In other words, I want all the submodalities, sound, smell, taste, vision, all of those to be a part of the plan. And once you have that, Emily, I'll ask you to put your intention into that. Intend that as if that plan is the plan for a future vacation you are about to take.
So what would I do? Like how, like
intend it, just like you intend to brush your teeth when you get up in the morning, or intend to go to the class. Intend it as something that is something you fully intend to achieve. Put your intention in it, in that plan.
Wow, I think I would actually go home and start writing the screenplay, since I just took a course on screenwriting.
There you go. And
actually
and so
heard
now,
it.
Yeah. So now we've run, first time, we didn't focus as much as normal on the intermission, but we've run in sketch format the worry protocol. When you do it yourself, once you understand what the steps are, you can do it really quickly, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And then if you do it time and time again, the idea is to snatch the worry when you first catch it, when you first see that, oops, I'm worrying, or I have this fear, where's that fear coming from? Oh, I'm imagining this. That's a worry. That's a misuse of my imagination. Over and again, the way this protocol works is, if you think about it, steps one, two, and three are compounding negative reinforcement. They're unhappy. You don't like to identify the worry or the fear or plan the downside. And when you put negatives on behaviors, they tend not to recur. However, step four, as I can hear in your voice, the planning of this is its own reward. And so upside planning and intention is the proper use of your imagination. And that becomes your new habit, the end of worry.
The end of worry, you are amazing. And for those of you that are listening, if you go to YouTube.com and you type in Steve Bierman, B-I-E-R-M-A-N, Steve Bierman, through the looking glass, his thing that will help you, the video that to assist you, is right there. So go to YouTube and look up Steve Bierman, through the looking glass. There's a lot of things with you on here. You guys can order the book, The End of Worry, on Amazon. And Dr. Steve Bierman, it's been such a pleasure having you, and I cannot wait to have you back.
Oh, I love you, Emily. Thank you so much.
I'm
grateful to
you,
and you're wonderful.
I appreciate it. And those of you listening, make it a great week.